Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He tells us after recent market corrections, it could take half a year to get back to testing new highs again. Ross takes a look at gold, crude, the U.S. dollar, and orange juice. Todd Callender joins us to talk about his efforts to launch a $1 trillion health-related lawsuit against 5G. Publisher of the Schachter Energy Report, Joseph Schachter, checks in from Calgary to chat about everything energy and how the U.S. tariff war against Canada could affect the energy sector. He's worried if Mark Carney continues as Prime Minister, it will be a sad day for Canadian energy prospects. Publisher of the VR Newsletters, Mark Leibovitz, talks about the stock markets, gold, silver, and the U.S. dollar, and how he rates President Trump's first few months in office. Mark also has a special offer for our listeners. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
Good to be back, Jim.
Ross, how would you describe what happened on the stock markets this week?
Well, you know, we're into that choppy phase. We got really oversold a week ago. Triggered our capitulation readings in the S&P, the Dow, the Russell 2000, and the NASDAQ all within a 48-hour window. And, you know, we were corrected, depending upon the index, anywhere between 8 and maybe 14% from the highs that we had in February. This just fit right into the models we were looking at. Support then has come in right at the longer-term moving averages, the 50-month or the 50-week moving average on the S&P, which had been a good target for us. So this week then, we ended up with just a fabulous rally off the bottom. I think you had two of the best 3 days of the year here. We retraced it all very quickly. Fibonacci, 38% as far as the S&P was concerned from the high. The bounce, we've been thinking that you probably get back to the 20-day moving average, which when we look at these big historical rolling tops, after the first oversold reading, that's the natural spot to bounce back to. So that was in place as of Wednesday of this week. And so we've then spent Thursday and Friday doing a little bit of backing and filling. Looks as though we are still, though, in the process of doing this big rolling top, and I think it's going to take the better part of the first half of this year before we are finally doing a retest of the highs and ready to sell off in a more dramatic fashion. But for the next few weeks, probably looking for choppy action, would be anticipating that the lows we put in on March the 3rd would probably go down and test those or undercut them, just go clean them out a little bit before we have a decent rally as far as the S&P and the other broader indices are concerned. So, you know, the type of signals that we just had, you don't come along that often, and they're the type of things where we try and be an opportunist. And when you're that oversold, we like to take a look at where a market might bounce back to and look at some call options that have got a strike price halfway to the target. And in the case of the S&P, if you look at it a week ago when we got the good oversold readings, if you'd picked up call options down there on the spider, the SPY, those ended up with a 60% rally as we got back and tested the 20-day moving average. So in a span of about 5 trading days, you know, you got yourself a nice quick return. You know, it's not a long-term trade, but you want to be looking for opportunities like that to jump into. I would think that, you know, there might be some more down the road, and maybe in some of the other markets that have had some pretty big runs, we'll get a correction and find opportunities over there as well.
What's going on with gold and silver?
We're starting to get, you know, a week ago, started to see some signs of excess on the upside, especially in things like the GDX, the GDXJ, which are the mining ETFs. And actually, if you take a look at the gold market from the December low, it was up about 16% into the middle of this week, but the miners were up over 30% during that same run. So it's been a nice play, not just for the bullion investors, but for the traders on the stocks. So on the stocks and bullion, it looks as though we're ready for a little deeper correction than we've been seeing. We haven't had anything of significance now as far as gold is concerned. Since the beginning of the year, there was one very, very small correction right at the end of February. We got one of our little springboard signals, a short-term oversold when we were down around 2850. I would hope that you know, we pull back again here in the near term. Who knows how deep it'll be. Take a look at some longer-term moving averages. I wouldn't be at all surprised that you come back and maybe retest 2800, but we'll just take a look for first sign of oversold conditions there. Silver gave an outright sell signal on our modeling here a couple of days ago, so looking for a deeper correction. We've had, I guess, about three or four days now down on silver and the silver stocks. If that continues for another week or so, it could be time to start getting aggressive again on the silvers. I think the next few months after a correction there could be pretty good on the upside. I've done some longer-term work that we published, so that I think there's some pretty big action probably within, let's call it, within the next 12 months as far as the silver market is concerned, and that could end up being a nice buy and hold position.
What happened with crude this week?
Crude is just, it's biding its time. You know, there's nothing big happening in there, but it's got the makings of a base. We've been down to 66, closed back at 68 on the week. Some basing signs, because you have gone down and just marginally taken out the support that we put in back last fall, but we've had no follow-through there. I think if you can manage to push through $69, that would suggest that there's a bottom in place. And if you take a look at some of the stocks here, they've been doing pretty darn well. The XLE, the ETF of the stocks, bottom at the beginning of the year, had a great rally from 83 up to 94, came back, retested support at 85, and it's now within a couple of dollars of the high of the year again. So the stocks are looking pretty healthy as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, if we take a look at sector rotation, when you've had, you know, think back to 2000 after we had the big dot-com blowout, in the ensuing year and a half, as the dot-coms just slowly imploded, the stocks with good dividends, stocks, material stocks, ended up being the favorite items. And if we look around right now, I think that's what you're going to see from the as we move through this year. So things such as the energy stocks, I think you want to be looking at as a buy on dips.
What's happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
The U.S. dollar has just had, from my perspective, just got a beautiful bottom in here. We had 9 consecutive weeks with the dollar index below 4 weeks earlier. So that's what we call a bullish setup. It's reasonably infrequent on the dollar index, and it has just an excellent track record. That sequential 9 is in place as of this week. We saw it back at when we were at around par in August. We saw it previously in December of 2023. We saw it in December of 2022. Each one of those ended up in a multi-month rally off the bottom. So here we are. Dollar looks as though it's bottomed down around 103. We're at close to 104 as of close of business this week. And I think there's some pretty good potential on the upside here. 106 for the dollar index is probably an original or an immediate target to be looking for.
Now, is there a squeeze play on orange juice right now?
Yeah, well, I guess the Canadians squeezed it pretty hard. You know, the OJ was up at 520, multi-year highs just a few months ago, and you know, since the tariffs have been either in place or at least the Canadians have decided that they want to have anything but Florida orange juice, the price dropped all the way down to 240. And finally, as of this week, we got the first upside close that we've had since the top of the market. So maybe the bottom is in for OJ right now. You know, it's not something that you're going to be sticking around with for too long.
Ross, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Todd Callender, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Todd Callender. He's the CEO of CloudHub, a medical freedom attorney, and host of Truth Be Told at VaxChoice.com. Todd, welcome to This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me, Jim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, respecting policies of YouTube and Google, this interview will be available on our website at HouseStreet.com and on our BitChute channel, Talk Digital Network. Coming up, Joseph Schachter, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HouseStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HouseStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HouseStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at SchachterEnergyReport.ca. That's S-C-H-A-C-H-T-E-R, EnergyReport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary, Alberta. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
My pleasure. Good to be with you again, Jim.
Can you tell us about the Schachter Energy Report and how people can subscribe to it?
Yeah, what we do in our product is we have a macro piece called Eye on Energy. People can go to the website, as you mentioned, SchachterEnergyReport.ca, and that's a macro piece that goes over the overview, what the, you know, the tugs and you know, are in terms of price of oil going up, price of oil going down, what happened during the week, what are EIA data, what's OPEC saying or doing, and the war issues. Is there a war premium again because Hamas and Israel and Gaza and, of course, the United States going after the Houthis to free and make sure the Red Sea channel is open. So we put all of that in a free piece called Eye on Energy. Our company-specific product, where we cover 39 companies, that's our paid product. So when people go to the subscribe, they'll see two choices, the Eye on Energy, the free product, or the subscribe product. and then we have both a quarterly and an annual. So for people who want to just dip their toe in and see what the product's all about on the company side, you know, recommend they take the quarterly. Once they like it, then they should switch to the annually, which gives them a chance to save some money. So we cover, of the 39 companies, we cover pipeline and infrastructure, you know, the Enbridges, Pembinas, you know, Keyeras, et cetera. We also cover energy service. We cover Canadian domestic oil companies, Canadian domestic natural gas and liquids companies. We cover the service sector and international companies, Canadian-based companies that work internationally. So we have a nice mix of companies depending upon what the clients want. We cover a lot of large cap companies. We cover companies with good dividend yields. We talk about the quarterly reports like Q4 24, and if we like the results or we didn't like the results, what we like, what do we not like, so that people have a balance. And because we're independent, we can use the ugly four-letter word SELL, which analysts normally on the street don't like doing if they work for a brokerage firm which wants to do advisory work or underwriting work. So we have that independence, and so we don't have that conflict.
These politicians in Canada would rather have a trade war than stop the flow of fentanyl and migrants across the border into the U.S., President Trump instituting tariffs against Canada. What could this mean for the crude oil and natural gas markets?
Well, you know, the fentanyl flow they're saying is minor, but, you know, you talk to people, you know, and, you know, you hear about the, you know, the B.C. into the U.S. Northwest. You hear about Ontario and Quebec border into the, you know, New England states. And so there is still a fentanyl, and, you know, maybe the volume is down, but, you know, if you go from X to a quarter of X, but a quarter of X can still kill 10 million people, you know, even though it's a smaller amount of fentanyl. That's the problem, and or the precursors that come from China can come in through the port of Vancouver and end up in the U.S. So, or Mexico. So you know, you hear stories about Alaska. You know, the Mexican gangs have been able to, you know, infiltrate and bring fentanyl all the way up to Alaska. So it's pretty ugly. So the question is, what will that do to the crude and oil markets? The U.S. needs our oil, and if they want to, you know, if they don't want the price to spike up, you know, the 10% tariff, you know, is a negative. But when you realize the Canadian dollar is, you know, under 70 cents, and you know that, you know, 1.43 times, you know, $69.70 or 68, I think it's today, you know, is still a pretty healthy price for the Canadian producers. And natural gas, you know, prices are weak now, but once we get LNG Canada up and running in the summer, I think we're going to see much better pricing. Instead of $2 an MCF now, Canadian, you know, the U.S. price is, you know, $3.98 U.S., so we should be closer to $3 Canadian right now. So there's a big gap there, and I think once LNG Canada is up and running and then we see more go-aheads, and again, you know, we're going to probably see Sunday, you know, the Liberals, you know, go to the Governor General, Mark Carney, go there and request an election. And, you know, late April, early May, we'll go to the voting polls and we'll see which group wins. You know, Mark Carney's got a lot of momentum going his way, but there's still a lot of, you know, angst about, you know, what happened during the Trudeau years. And is Mark Carney a change? You know, not when you look at the cabinet, it's the same people.
President Trump's trying to negotiate a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia, but several conflicts in the Middle East continue. What could this mean for energy markets?
Well, in terms of Ukraine-Russia, it's it's going to be a lengthy process to get them to finally solve it. It also means, you know, what happens to the land that Russia occupies right now. Do they keep Crimea? Do they keep some of the Donbas? You know, what does Ukraine get in return? I don't think they're going to want NATO troops on the ground there. Will they be part of the EU but not part of NATO? I think there's a lot of issues there. The Middle East is a different story. The Straits of Hormuz, all these critical pinch points for crude oil, you know, the Red Sea with, you know, the attacks on American military shipping and public, you know, the private sector shipping. You know, the Houthis, you know, have been armed by Iran. So, you know, the United States has one aircraft carrier in the Red Sea, which has been doing the bombing on the Houthis. But there's two more aircraft carriers coming into the area by the, so there'll be three carrier groups, in, you know, in a month or two. And that's why I think Trump gave the Iranians 2 months to come to the table to discuss nuclear disarmament. And but if there's any problem and there's any, you know, wake up or, you know, in terms of, you know, the Houthis attack and hit an American military ship, or, the Iranians, do something, you know, then the Americans, you know, could be in a shooting war with Iran. I don't think Iran's going to be around for very long, or at least have much of a military before when the Americans would, you know, take them down. But all of that uncertainty, all of that concern, all of that fear will drive energy prices higher. If there's an attack by the United States on Iran, I think we'll see $80 oil. If it's a prolonged, more than a couple of days situation, we could see a spike up to over 100. If you recall, when the Russia invaded Ukraine, the price of oil went from 80 to over 100, and I think it was 130. So, you know, the wars can have a big impact on the price of crude oil.
This week, the Fed held interest rates unchanged. Last week, the Bank of Canada lowered interest rates by a quarter point. What kind of effect will these have on energy markets?
Well, in Canada, we're worried about a weaker economy, and a weaker economy means we consume less energy. In terms of the Fed keeping rates unchanged, you know, they would have liked to lower them, but they're worried about tariffs, as you may have seen from the interview with Powell yesterday, that there's a lot of uncertainty, and, you know, and so he's holding, you know, flat, and maybe the next one in May will be no change. You know, they'll wait to see what the tariffs do. We're all going to be waiting for April 2nd to see what the U.S. government does with these countervailing tariffs, and, you know, what they say, you know, France is doing versus this product or that product. Same thing with Canada. Our dairy gets thrown into there. You know, and so I think that we're going to be probably in a period of uncertainty here. And if the markets see any disruptions or any, you know, right now people are kind of not really thinking there's going to be much out of this April 2nd. I think it's going to be pretty significant and potentially, you know, serious dollars in terms of tariffs. That could disrupt the market and the Dow, you know, which is, you know, just under, you know, let's say 42,000, you know, could drop to 34,000. So, you know, I think that people don't realize that, you know, the markets are priced to perfection. There's still a lot of, you know, bounce recently in the AI and the Magnificent Seven, and they're all trading still at very, very lofty levels and multiples. If there's any disruption here, you know, if there's a recession that happens in the States and the consumer numbers have been weak, retail sales, consumer confidence, you know, we could end up seeing a recession caused by the tariffs. And right now, you know, housing in the States is weak. You know, we're seeing housing in Canada weak. You know, you look at Toronto, and I don't know about the Vancouver market, but it's sloppy here in Calgary. You know, interest rates are lower, but, you know, there's more houses on the market, and people are, because of uncertainty and fear of job losses, there's not a lot of transactions. I've got, you know, signs in my area of the city that have been up for a couple months, and you know, usually you sold very quickly going back in the heydays of a year ago. You don't see that now.
Could inflation be coming back, and what could this mean for energy markets?
Well, I think, you know, the tariffs are going to cause inflation because, you know, imports are going to go up, the cost of imports of whatever it is. We're going to see labor costs probably have, you know, go up, you know, at some point here. You know, and all of the consumables, like if you're building a house, you know, the appliances are going to come from outside of the country. There's going to be tariffs on that. You know, the question is, what do the Liberals do when they get into power with an industrial carbon tax? And that, of course, gets paid, you know, charged into prices, which goes to the consumers. So I think that, you know, inflation, you know, 2% target by the central banks is illusionary. I think we're looking at more like 4 to 5%, and there's a risk of it going to 6 or 7 if the tariffs are meaningful and stay on for a long period of time. And of course, supply chains get disrupted, which adds to the price pressure.
Now, BC has had a carbon tax for over a decade, and it only reduced emissions. Well, I can't even say it reduced emissions once. That was only 2008 when we had a recession. It hasn't done anything to reduce emissions. People just pay higher prices. Do these carbon taxes do anything for the environment?
I'm skeptical, you know, and I think it's just another new tax that governments need to balance their budgets, so they just find a new way of getting money out of people's pockets. And, you know, you see it when, you know, you're paying, what, $2 a liter at the pump. We're paying $1.55 or so at the pump right now in Calgary. And so, you know, we're looking at, you know, is the government going to put more taxes on that? And, you know, it all of that just means inflation. You know, I think the price of oil is going higher. I think there's two risks to the price of oil. One of them is China's been kind of sloppy on their economy side. If they end up saying, okay, we're not going to trade as much with the States, but we'll trade more with Africa, South America, other parts of Asia, you know, selling their, you know, BYD cars and other things that people want and at lower prices than Volkswagen or Tesla, you know, then you're going to see that increase the price of crude. The wild card is more of removal of supply, and one of those is Venezuela. You know, Chevron's there, and you know, Biden, you know, put in allowed them to sell them diluent, 240,000 barrels, and then bring out 360,000 barrels of heavy crude, which went into refineries that Chevron owns. Trump now is saying, you know, we're stopping it. He may delay it a little bit, but you know, if Venezuela loses 500,000 barrels of exports, you know, that's one part. The bigger part will be Iran. If Trump is serious about getting the nuclear program from Iran gone, and to destabilize the economy so that the pressure is on the Ayatollahs, more willing to look at diplomacy. They could be, you know, he's already, done the thing like they did to Russia about the black ships. So, you know, they can't transport, they can't get insurance, also banking, you know, making it harder to do transactions. You could see Iran from, 3.3 million barrels a day lose a million and a half. Well, you know, if it's a million and a half there and 500,000 Venezuela, you take 2 million barrels off the market sometime by the end of the year. You know, Saudi Arabia and OPEC say they have 2.2 million barrels of spare capacity. I don't buy that for a minute. I think maybe Saudi Arabia has a million, but it takes time to bring that production on. So I think that if we do see the pressure on Venezuela and Iran, I think that's a good reason to argue for $90 WTI in the fourth quarter of 2025.
President Trump is pushing drill, baby, drill. Could this put a lid on the price of crude and natural gas?
Absolutely not. The industry is rational. They need rates of return for their shareholders. If the Federal Reserve of Dallas puts out a piece, a presentation, which shows that the average price break-even for the different basins in Texas is $65 U.S. So, you know, if you get down to that level, we'll probably see the Baker Hughes drilling data go down, which means less drilling, which means, you know, can you replace the decline rates? That will be an issue. So I think drill, baby, drill is needs $80 oil. The CERA week, CERA week in I'm not sure if it was Dallas or Houston, which was a conference last a week ago or 2 weeks ago. They were the people there, like Harold Hamm and some of the icons of the industry, were saying we need $80 oil to probably see an increase in drilling and an increase in production. So if the U.S. wants to see 1 million, 2 million barrels of more crude oil, it's going to require $80-$90 oil on a sustainable basis for the industry to be willing to spend the cash flow that they generate to bring on more production. And part of the problem is you also need more infrastructure. You need more pipelines to bring the crude oil to market, and you need the natural gas that's associated with the oil. You need to have pipelines to take that to the Gulf Coast so it can go into the LNG plants. All of that requires a lot of money and a lot of time to build those things.
Now, Texas-based Energy Transfer won a $660 million lawsuit against Greenpeace for its the largest anti-fossil fuel protest in U.S. history against the Dakota Access Pipeline. What does this tell people who want to develop pipelines? Do you have a green light now if Greenpeace isn't in the way?
Well, I think, you know, if we were still with the Biden administration, and, you know, they might have, you know, the courts probably would rule, you know, lower the number, you know, or even, you know, maybe, support them. But with the Trump administration and the pro-energy policies, you know, they're going to go to court to knock that number down. But it effectively bankrupts, I think, Greenpeace if they lose and they're forced to pay whatever they can or whatever assets they have get seized. So I think it, you know, the pendulum has swung from ESG and pro-environment and woke and all that, and on the energy side, it's now self-sufficiency in the U.S., which they are. Their exports last week were the highest level ever, you know, over 4 million barrels a day, which means, you know, clients around the world are getting U.S. oil versus buying it from, you know, Middle East players. I think that, you know, we're going to, you know, see, you know, this continue during the, you know, 4 years of the Trump administration. And the question is, you know, do the Republicans, you know, stay in power in 28 or on?
Is there a bullish case and a bearish case for crude?
Always. So let's go through the bullish case. The bullish case is... The economies around the world recover, you know, figure out how to handle the tariffs, and we get economic growth, 2-3% worldwide global GDP growth, which means demand will go up by a million barrels a day. Second, you have the bullish case if there is disruption in supply from Iran and Venezuela, the 2 million barrels I talked about earlier. You remove 2 million and demand goes up by a million, all of a sudden the industry can't meet that demand, which means prices have to go up to ration the available supply. And then, of course, it takes time for companies to use the cash flows to bring on more production. The bearish case is if we go into recession, if the tariffs are so punitive that it really just shuts down global trade, which means global demand for energy comes down, you know, it becomes a bearish case, and you know, I don't think we get sustained prices under $60 WTI. But you know, we did see that whenever there is a dislocation in the markets, as we were in, you know, after the financial crisis, we went down, I think, into the low 30s. If you remember, in 2020, the COVID disaster, we went into negative pricing, and the next contract was $6.50 a barrel, but they didn't last long. Within a few months, you were back into $60-$70 a barrel, which is effectively the economic value. And then, of course, if you have strong demand, you can easily get back over $100. If you remember, in 2007, 2008, demand was stronger than supply. And in the second quarter of 2008, we ran up to $147 a barrel because everybody was producing flat out and demand was very strong. And, of course, we then had the financial crisis, which kind of slowed the economy, slowed demand, and the price of oil backed off significantly.
Is there a bullish case and bearish case for natural gas?
Yeah, the bullish case is LNG. If people want to get off coal and dung and want to have a, you know, cleaner air, and also, you know, because of the massive increase in demand from data centers, we need to rebuild a lot of the electricity grid in many places because they haven't spent a lot of money on it. So the bullish case is there for natural gas, mostly because of demand issues, and then of course cleaner burning fuels. And you know, we're still going to need more renewables and all that, but it takes time for that to come on. On the bearish case, it would be, you know, the slowing economy again. If and also, you know, countries saying, $15 an MCF US for Asia or Europe, that's a really high price. So they decide, oh, coal is cheaper, or economic weakness means you don't need to import as much of that expensive natural gas. So those are the issues for both the bull and the bear case.
What's the latest on rig data?
Well, the rig data has been flat. It really hasn't grown. You know, it's down for oil slightly in the U.S. U.S. oil and natural gas rig counts are down, but rigs are much more efficient now. They can go longer. They drill faster. The upgrades and the latest technologies. In Canada, we have the oil rig count up because of the demand for, you know, going to the south, but more importantly, the TMX going west. So there's a lot of oil drilling for heavy oil, Clearwater. You know, you've heard that name before, one of the most prolific zones out there, most economic plays for heavy oil. So there is, a pickup in the Canadian side for oil. Natural gas is pretty weak because $2 gas doesn't make anybody wake up in the morning to go and drill wells. But if you're doing liquids-rich wells, the liquids pay the bills. The gas doesn't give you much money.
What are the large-cap, mid-tier, and junior energy stocks doing?
Well, we've had a nice rally in the last couple of weeks. We were down at $65 WTI. We're now $68, $69 WTI. And we've had a nice bounce in the general stock market. So we've had a good bounce in a lot of names. There's been some conferences, and so people are hearing the stories. Companies are out there doing IR, investor relations, doing roadshows. Companies are doing conferences, presentations. So we've had a nice bounce. I think we're overbought here in the near term. We got a buy signal on March the 5th, and we sent out an action alert adding new names because the price of oil was 65 and stocks were very, very cheap. We've bounced since then. I think we're going to see another pullback in April, and I think that we could get back and, you know, test that $65 WTI. So down $3, but it could bring a 10% correction in some of these some of the energy names, both the oil and natural gas names, and that would give us potentially a new buy signal. We have other ideas that could kick into our buy range, recommended buy ranges, and then we'll send out an action alert to subscribers. So if people are listening to this, want to own Canadian names, be it E&P or service or, you know, pipeline infrastructure or royalty, we cover all those bases, and we have recommended buys now, but there'll be new buys that probably come out in April when we get the next buy signal.
Do you expect volatile energy markets ahead?
Always. That's one thing that you can bet on. Seasonality, the strongest demand periods are winter and summer. The shoulder seasons are usually weak. You have impact of politics, war affects it, as we know when we talked about, Russia, Ukraine and the pop-up that happened there. Economic difficulties, as we saw, with the financial crisis and COVID, health issues and economic collapse. So markets or energy is probably the high beta way to play the good and the bad parts of an economic cycle.
If the Canadian economy is using less energy, would that be a sign a recession is ahead?
I think the recession is more related to the issue of tariffs and consumer confidence. In winter we need to heat our homes. In the summertime, air conditioning demand. So, and the population in Canada, 41.5 million people now. So if as we have an economic, growth and more housing, more people, the young people, going out and from living in their parents' home and, you know, buying or, you know, or renting an apartment or, you know, buying a house, you know, so all of that, you know, means, you know, more demand in the long term. But in the short term, yes, slowdown in the economy would mean less energy.
The U.S. dollar has continued to pull back since we last spoke. Is this causing energy prices to rise?
Yeah, we've had a $3 rise in the price of crude oil, 65 to, you know, 68.30 at the close today. It's up $1.34 because of the Middle East issues. You know, $3 is $3, you know, and the U.S. dollar, you know, is backed off. But I would put the $3 increase more on the Middle East war tensions than I would on the American dollar weakening. You know, the American dollar is down, you know, maybe 2-3 cents from its high, but it still is the, you know, the reserve currency for the world. You know, a lot of people are into, you know, crypto, and you know, gold has done extremely well. It's been fabulous, breaking through $3,000 U.S. And crypto, of course, is gold on steroids. In terms of what it's done, it's backed off, of course, from its highs, and the swings every day are, you know, are stomach churning at times. But you know, I think the U.S. dollar potentially, if there is, you know, the tariff war, you know, and if, or if there's more concern about Middle East wars or whatever, you know, people will, you know, if they're worried about issues of political tension, economic dislocation, you know, the problems with the politics in Europe, you know, the increase in government spending for defense and military action and things like that, we could see the U.S. dollar still be strong. Could it move around 3 to 5 cents, you know, within a range over the next couple of years? Yes. But do I see it breaking par or, you know, the euro, you know, bouncing 10-20%? I don't see that.
Is Mark Carney, the prime minister we didn't vote for, likely to have any effect on the energy markets?
If Mark Carney gets in as prime minister, he has a history of being, you know, an anti-energy, anti-fossil fuel. He wrote a book about it. He was involved with the UN. You know, he's gone to the center because he wants to get elected. Once he gets into power, he even has the former environment minister still in his cabinet. So my view is, you know, this is all to get elected. And once you're in power, you know, he has a tariff battle. But once the tariff, you know, thing settles down and, you know, Europe may be, you know, in front of Trump more because of the, you know, when you look at the EU Union, it's as big an economy as the U.S. If he goes after them more than Canada and Mexico, then I think we're going to see Mark Carney and the Liberals swing more to the left again, and that's not good.
For years, people on the left have been buying Teslas. Now people on the left are vandalizing Teslas owned by people on the left. Is the entire world going crazy?
Well, you know, it's also a product issue. That Cybertruck of theirs, they just had a massive recall again. So there's, you know, with him being involved, you know, Elon Musk and being in Washington, sleeping on the floor in his office, you know, doing all the things that Doge is doing, you know, the house that built the wealth, SpaceX is now more valuable to him than Tesla is. But, you know, I think, you know, the left being against it and people putting signs up, you know, I bought this before Elon went into politics, you know, but, you know, we're seeing, you know, with the auto show in BC, they pulled the Tesla exhibit. So I think, you know, as long as, you know, Elon and Doge are doing things that the left doesn't like, I think that it's going to hurt his sales. He also needs to refresh his product line. So he has a number of things that are in front of him, but I think he's, you know, wealthy enough that he can afford a hit in the near term. While he's doing this Washington gig of his and siring more children. So he's busy doing other things.
Can you tell us where our listeners can subscribe to the Schachter Energy Report?
Well, as we started the conversation, www.schachter.ca, the free product, the macro piece called Eye on Energy is there. and then the subscriber product, where we cover 39 companies, from the biggest to smaller companies as little as 2,000, the biggest being companies 600,000 BOEs a day on the E&P side, the biggest of the pipeline infrastructure companies, service sector companies. They just go to the website, and as I said, for people who want to dip their toe in, take down the quarterly subscription, and once you see the product and you like the product and you're benefiting from the product with good, with great investment ideas that that easily cover the cost of the subscription, then they should switch to the annual, which is the more economic way to subscribe.
And how can people take part in Catch the Energy Conference October 18th?
Yeah, if you're a subscriber, you get two complimentary tickets, which so there's another reason to do that. We have 45 companies that will be presenting. 2 years ago, we had the Premier of the province open the conference. Last year, we had Brian Jean, the energy minister. So we're going to have somebody on the political side opening the conference to talk about the energy sector and the politics of energy. And then we go into the company presentation side after my opening macro presentation. And then we have a full day, Saturday, October 18th, 2025 at Mount Royal University. There's free parking, and we provide you with food from breakfast all the way through lunch and snacks in the morning and the afternoon. So it's a nice day for people, and they can either buy tickets on the website or do it through the subscriptions. And, you know, we had last year 906 people that were registered, 702 showed up. We're expecting this year 1,000 to register and 800 to show up. So it's become a very popular conference, and it's really the only FaceTime individuals can get. You know, institutions see roadshows all the time with the companies, but for individual investors to have FaceTime where the companies have a 25-minute presentation and 10-minute moderated Q&A, and then afterwards they can go to the booth and talk to the management, the CEO of the company, ask questions of the companies they own or are interested in. That FaceTime at the booth is very valuable, and we're really the only one doing that, specifically for the energy sector. You know, you have PDAC doing it for mining in Toronto. We're the only ones doing it for energy, and we do it here based in Calgary.
Joseph, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure as always, Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. Coming up, Mark Leibovit, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Do you have a special offer for our listeners?
Well, we still have our half off for our newsletters, in particular the annual forecast model product, which comes out every time this year. And it's the promo code is half off, just half off. And you go to VRTrader.com. And when you select one of the newsletters and you get to the promo code section, you enter half off and you get 50% off for any of our newsletters. And while we're talking about the business, I just want to make the disclaimer that I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice.
Does it look like the stock market correction could be over?
Could be. Could be. Sentiment is pretty negative. Everybody's talking about the recession, which I thought was coming anyway. And, you know, markets tend to, you know, bottom ahead of where the worst news unfolds. You know, we're in the time frame for a low. It's, you know, March I was talking about around the vernal equinox. Could stretch into April and May. I could be off a bit, but it looked like with the sentiment as negative as it is and you know, cycles indicating that this is a potentially low time frame, I would be buying stocks. I wouldn't buy them all here, but I would, you know, for whatever you're interested in getting involved with, whether it's the indexes or what. I don't think the move is over. So anyway, this is an expected corrective time frame, and we certainly did get a little bit of a shakeout If we take out the lows in the last few days, then I suppose it could stretch out. And April tends to be a negative month from a historical point of view, not necessarily a stock market point of view, in terms of how negative events occur in April. Like, usually I post a list every year in our newsletter, all kinds of historical crises and events throughout history. But to answer your question, I'm positive, and I'm looking for new highs in the market this year.
With gold over $3,000 an ounce, where do you see it going from here?
Well, I think it's a little toppy right here, just on a trading basis. I was asked this morning about that. Some of the stocks seem to have blown off here a little bit to the upside. But I'm overall, you know, constructive, as I've been for the last few years we've been talking about it. You know, you can imagine all kinds of numbers. But, you know, there's a big movement afoot, particularly in the Trump administration, to tie gold to the bond market and to the dollar and all kinds of interesting strategies that were being bandied about. And if that's the case, and also the variable out there, you know, it's gone quiet here the last couple of weeks, ever since there was talk about auditing the gold at Fort Knox. That sort of quieted down a little bit. And I think it's being suppressed, unfortunately, because my feeling has been for decades that the gold's really not there. And if that ever comes out, which they're going to try to prevent from coming out, I'm afraid, you know, gold would explode. I mean, it can go to $5,000 or something, or $10,000 or some incredible number. If we really find out the U.S. doesn't have the gold supply that we thought it had all these decades. So the leaning is that probably it's not there. There is a shortage. You know, war still seems to be brewing in Europe, despite you know, the Euro group, the European Community, NATO, the whole group of them. You know, are stocking up on military supplies and talking about raising more capital. And even there's even talk of confiscating funds from citizens to help pay for war needs and supplies. It just seems like they're in a crisis situation over there. So what tends to happen is money will go into the U.S., gold and stocks, and that should be a big supporter for gold looking forward. So even though I made the comment about a trading top here, I mean, you can always get, you know, 5% correction and so forth. The trend is still up. So it depends if you're trading or not. Just the charts say we sort of blew off here a little bit to the upside, and if I had to predict next week, I would say a little bit of a pullback.
Could silver hit $50 again?
Oh, sure. Anything is possible. It can go a lot higher than that, too. You know, the rush into hard assets, you know, silver is actually a better play than gold on a percentage basis. If you believe gold's going up, even though you want to hold both. All metals are moving, by the way, too. Copper and the whole spectrum of metals and resources, even the commodity prices are upticking, even the agricultural items are moving up, which we have positions in as well in our newsletter. So silver should go up. You know, I don't have a specific target for you. The $50 is that big benchmark high that everybody seems to be relying on, and I guess if that ever comes out, the sky's the limit. So like anything else, I would hold some silver, sure.
The U.S. dollar's pulled back significantly. What do you see ahead for the greenback?
I'm still bullish on the dollar. I think money's going to flow into the, despite BRICS and everything else, I still think it's a bastion of safety. Donald Trump wants to keep the dollar strong. Money inflows into the U.S., particularly if things get unsettled with Europe. Still say the dollar is in play. So, I'm not negative on the dollar, and particularly from what I understand, if you're going to be buying gold offshore, you're going to have to convert your currencies into dollars, which will drive the dollar higher. So, yes, it's going to have a little bit of a correction, but I'm not giving up on the dollar yet, and I'm not looking at an inverse relationship that the dollar has to go down for gold to go up or vice versa. I look into the markets separately. I think that's an adage that is incorrectly interpreted over the years. Is not a direct relationship, though you do see it occasionally. So positive on the dollar, positive on gold, positive on stocks, positive on commodities. You know, I'm just going to have to catch little swings here along the way during the course of the year. And the more talk there is of recession, and negative events, the more bullish it is for these events. And, you know, I sort of hinted at war and that type of thing. I don't think the U.S. is going to get into a war, but war tends to be good for business, unfortunately. So we'll see how it all unfolds.
Crude oil has been pulling back at the same time as the U.S. dollar. Is this normal?
Well, you're talking about an inverse relationship, you know, between oil and the dollar. And again, I don't necessarily subscribe to the inverse relationship. You know, it happens on some occasions, and some occasions it doesn't. Right now, I'm bearish on crude oil over the near term because I think there's going to be more production. I've talked about this previously. I think, you know, crude oil could drop to the mid-50s. It's now in the high 60s and maybe even into the mid-40s, and this could be a 12-month comment as more production comes online. Now, short-term, we're a little oversold here, and I guess if something flares up in Europe or in the Mideast, you could see a little technical rally in crude oil, rally a little bit. It's dropped here, you know, quite a bit from the 80s down to the high 60s, so it could get a little bit of a technical rally. But I'm playing the short side in crude oil, so I think the overall trend is going to be down, though you could get a pop, and you'll have to watch your charts carefully here in the months ahead if you're trading. But now beyond that, you know, maybe crude oil take off big down the road for other reasons. And certainly if the charts flip-flop on me and something says I'm long, you know, we would cover our shorts and act accordingly. So I'm very light on the short side now because we've already had a nice drop in crude oil. So I'm actually hoping we get a rally to initiate some newer positions.
Does it look like Bitcoin has put in a topping pattern?
Yeah, I'm more looking at it as a bottoming pattern, honestly. I think if you've already had a nice correction in it. Everybody seems to be nervous about it. You know, it dropped from 107,000 down to 78,000. It's trading in the 80s. It could maybe have another leg down to 73, 74, which I've talked about. But, you know, I'm looking for 140 to 200. And I think the real play is other cryptos, not Bitcoin, because of the you know, the cost of it. There's so much going on. I'm glad you brought up the crypto subject because it's a big week this week for XRP, which is one of the cryptos which is going to be involved in the digital asset stockpile that Donald Trump group wants to put together. And the story in XRP is they were in litigation with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the story is the SEC is not going to pursue anything further against them. So that's bullish for XRP. And keep in mind, you know, the plan is to create a Bitcoin reserve here in the U.S. because Donald Trump wants us to be the Bitcoin capital of the world, or the crypto capital of the world, I should say. In addition, there's going to be a digital asset stockpile, which is going to include a bunch of other cryptos, and they call them stable coins. But the real key here is getting legislation passed, and it could take, you know, this year through into mid-next year before all that happens. But definitely the trend is going to be toward the you know, the crypto, the alternate currency. So you gotta remain positive. There's going to be volatility in the market, as they always are. We've seen it in Bitcoin, we've seen it in all the other coins, but I think the big trend is up, and I'm on a super buy signal for the whole group, and I'm actually look for weakness if I could acquire some more of these coins. I mean, you know, something like XRP, which is $2.50, let's say, and you compare that to Bitcoin at $78,000, $80,000. So, you know, there's some room for the upside, not to mention Dogecoin, which is Elon Musk's creation from way back. You know, it's trading on 20 cents or 25 cents. I have to look at it today. You know, it's a no-brainer. You know, it's like anything else. It's a speculation. Keep a small part of your portfolio. You know, a lot going on. So as far as the Bitcoin is concerned, you know, honestly, I hope they shake it down to 73,000, 74,000. It'll give it a little bit of better entry point. The charts are sort of neutral here. I mean, we pull back, they're sort of basing. It could go sideways a little lower, I suppose, into the summer, but I'm still on the buy signal there.
What is the fear greed index doing?
Way down there, Jim. It's down like, you know, 19 or 20 on a scale of 0 to 100. So Everybody's fearful, which is good. But, you know, sometimes when the greed index is really bearish and down the way it is, you know, it tends to have momentum in that direction for a while, just like when it's on the greed side and it's way up there at 80, 90 on the scale. Stocks tend to move higher. The markets tend to move higher as the greed continues to build on its own momentum. So the fact is down here, from a contrarian's point of view, is bullish. But, you know, it doesn't say we couldn't get a little bit more selling since, the financial press and everybody's negative. And there's a lot of, new news out there going in all different directions, tariffs and all that stuff, which I'm all supportive of, frankly. I think it's good for the country and good to equal things out, particularly when, countries get charged by other countries ridiculous tariffs. I don't have the exact number, but I was told some products that go into India are up to 100% in tariffs. So now that's just one of many examples. So there's a lot of stuff where, what's good for the goose should be good for the gander in the tariffs here. Either nobody has tariffs at all or everybody equalizes them out. That's really, really the answer. But, as far as your answer on the fear of greed index, it's bullish because we're oversold here and everybody's bearish. But, you want to see something flip. You want to see momentum change, and then you get a good sign that the worst is behind you.
The Fed this week left its central bank rate unchanged. Could interest rates remain stable for a while?
Well, who knows what the Fed's going to do. I'm hoping for a replacement of Jay Powell next year when his term is up. Judy Shelton is being mentioned as a name. She's a big gold bug, by the way, and I don't know if she'd get confirmed by the U.S. Senate or not. And, there's no question Powell's out the door, when his term expires. He's been, really a catastrophe, as many other Fed chairmen have been over the years. As far as what they're going to do with rates now, I have no idea, what their plans are. They talk about a couple more cuts this year. It's a psychological factor more than anything else. The truth is what the Fed does with money supply and a lot of the other shenanigans that they pull, which is not talked about, is more important than the visible rate. And even more important to that is what the bond market is actually doing. The 30-year or 20-year bonds, the tail wags the dog. So, he's talking about just the short-term rate, but the bond market really has to tell the story. So if the bond market, starts to rally here, long bonds, that means, investors have confidence that things are turning and inflation has improved, and ultimately the Fed will follow what the long bonds are doing. So you really got to watch the bond market. And, like I say, the Fed has no control over that market. In fact, the truth is that's why I've been arguing, not unique in that, the creature from Jekyll Island book that came out decades ago talking about the abolishment of the Fed. We really need the free markets to determine interest rates, which is what's happening now in the long bond market, but not in the sphere of the Federal Reserve with the discount rate and short-term rates. We need to get rid of the Fed, honestly. Or maybe if Judy Shelton comes in and they back, as Donald Trump is talking about, treasuries or bonds with gold and getting this whole interest rate fluctuation thing behind us that the Fed controls, because they've done a horrible job of doing it since 1913 when the Fed was created. So, it's a sore on a blemish on our government, and the central banks have done a terrible job over the decade. So, again, I'm a free market person, and that's what we really need to happen.
Do you think President Trump would prefer a higher or lower U.S. dollar?
Definitely higher U.S. dollar. He's a very strong proponent of a strong dollar. He's anti-BRIC nations, trying to replace the dollar. Whether he'll be successful or not, who knows? The dollar is still the go-to spot. It's still the place, And I think, I'm saying it's something can't happen over time. History says currencies don't last or they deteriorate significantly. So, ultimately you can tie the survival of the United States to the dollar as well. You can say, well, the U.S. may not be around forever either, just as many other civilizations have come and gone. So you can make a big picture interpretation as well. But I'm sure Trump is looking for a strong dollar as a reflection of a strong U.S.
Do you think President Trump would prefer a higher or lower interest rate?
No question he would like lower interest rates because it's a psychological factor. I'm sure he's pressuring Jay Powell, which may or may not do any good. And if he doesn't come along, then like I say, he's going to push for him to resign or let his term expire and let someone like Judy Shelton get in. So, yeah, from a political point of view, practical point of view, you want, you know, it's a visible piece of news. Like I say, there's so much else going on in the background besides the physical interest rate that the Fed, you know, announces or talks about, the discount rate. But, yeah, psychologically, the rates start coming down and, you know, people feel better and their financing costs are less. And hopefully that translates into lower mortgage numbers. And, yeah, so I'm sure he's pressuring for lower rates.
Are the real estate markets looking bearish?
No, they're actually looking more bullish to me. They've been in a correction. Ultimately, you know, all markets go up and down. We've already seen a pullback in real estate here for the last, it's almost 12 months now. It's been downticking and correcting partially because, you know, the interest rates have been up and mortgage rates have been higher. And also because we've gone into a little bit of a, you know, recession, people are not doing as well. A lot of people are being laid off. So the real world, you know, there's a recession going on out there, and, you know, 8% interest rates didn't help people. And I think they downticked now at about 6.5% or so percent. So that created this correction in the market. So I think it's, you know, I'm not saying it's turned today, but I'm looking for a resumption of the bull market in real estate. And whether it's, you know, next week or 3 months from now, you know, there's some signs already that it might be turning around a little bit. So I'm looking for another boom. I think another surge in real estate prices, possibly tied to lower rates. We'll see how it all unfolds. And it may, you know, may take into early this year, into next year. But if you could see bargains in real estate, particularly if you can buy for cash, you could take advantage of it.
President Trump and Elon Musk with Doge are cleaning up the mess that is the U.S. government. Is this affecting any markets?
It's making people nervous. And fortunately, you got the, I call it the stench from the bench. You get the leftist judges here in the U.S. that were appointed by Obama seem to be trying to negate every step Donald Trump makes or Elon Musk makes with regard to cleaning up the government and reducing costs and getting rid of wasteful spending and, real incompetent departments like the Department of Education, which I believe he announced yesterday he's trying to get rid of. Along, of course, he will need some congressional approval at some point, but it's making people nervous, you know, and also with people being fired, losing their jobs, or the potential happening, that sort of contributes to the recession a little bit. You know, so much of the growth that we saw here in the U.S., you know, reflected in the employment numbers and economic activity was government generated. It was spending on the part of the government, much of which was wasteful, that distorted the numbers. So things looked better under the Biden administration because they just spent the government spending the money and in increasing the payrolls and all that. It wasn't the industrial economic sector, you know, the business sector. It was the government. So now that's being pulled back or possibly pulled back, that affects you know, the numbers, and they come in, you know, unemployment is probably going up and things like that. Well, it was distorted to begin with. We need the free enterprise to take over here, and hopefully that'll be the case. So it's affecting markets short term. You got to watch the industrial reports, like the Chicago PMI and industrial-related indexes for a sense of what's happening in the economy. You don't rely on the government numbers, which are generally lies anyway or miscalculations. So making the markets nervous here short term, but ultimately if they succeed and we reduce a lot of expenditures that are wasteful, it seems like I say, the leftist judges don't want that to happen. They're doing anything they can to prevent it, which is really, really aggravating a lot of people, including myself. I mean, you know, the electorate elected Donald Trump to clean things up, and then you've got these leftist judges just out there. They shouldn't have the authority to do that. And hopefully either the Supreme Court gets involved or some legislation is passed in Congress to shut these guys up and get them out of the way or impeach them because, you know, Donald Trump or his Doge find, you know, extraordinarily wasteful expenditures and procedures, and they try to stop them, but the judges stop them from doing it strictly for political reasons, that's got to come to an end. So we got a lot of conflict here. Hopefully it will resolve to the positive, but unfortunately a lot of bad people.
Could tariffs and trade wars cause volatility in the markets going forward?
As already. So we've already seen the volatility, people concerned. They're misinterpreting the tariffs. They don't understand, you know, what they really are, how long they're going to be in place, whether it's a political move or they actually are enacted or whether they're adjusted. Bottom line is, the administration here, which all administrations in all countries should look for, is, you know, level playing field in business. So until that's straightened out, you know, markets might be a bit nervous about it, but it's all for the good, you know. What's good for Peter should be good for Paul, you know. So let's see what happens.
What are your thoughts on President Trump's ongoing push for Canada to become the 51st state?
Terrible idea, because we're getting into politics a little bit, but Canada is a more liberal place, and I'm a conservative. I'm not liberal, and except for the province of Alberta, which is, you know, your hometown and your area, which is more conservative, I could see Alberta joining the U.S. perhaps. But think about the negatives if you're from a political strategist point of view. Let's assume Canada becomes part of the U.S. You're going to have all these provinces, and each of them is going to have a U.S. senator, and that's going to be negative votes against the conservative movement. So who wants to have all those new negative liberal senators in the U.S., Congress? So it's a bad idea. And I think it would just, I don't think he meant it exactly. I mean, maybe he did. I don't believe he would actually want to annex, or in Canada, certainly he's not going to support it. I think a poll in your country has already indicated more than 50% wouldn't even want to consider it. So I think it's just a bunch of talk and political, game playing and strategy involved here. And, it's just a question of, Canada's been a great partner over the years, but we got to level out the tariffs and equal. I guess you probably know or don't know, but I understand there are tariffs even between the provinces. I heard yesterday that some businesses or some attorneys can't do one business in one province versus another without paying a tariff or a premium. So even within Canada, there's tariffs intra-country. It's like saying one of the U.S. states that you can't do business in another state without paying tariffs for anything that crosses the border, even within the U.S. And that's ridiculous. So apparently that occurs in Canada, which a lot of people didn't even know about, and I didn't even know about till yesterday. So that's got to all be straightened out. Maybe the fact that this 51st state thing was brought up, maybe it'll clean up things a little bit within Canada in terms of its own internal policy.
President Trump's been in office for 2 months. How would you rate his performance so far?
I'm tickled pink. Unfortunately, I don't like a lot of the resistance he's getting, particularly among these judges that I'm talking about, who are just being spiteful, if for nothing else, just trying to create problems. And really, I don't think have the authority to do it, but are doing it anyway. But yeah, I think he's doing a great job. He's done more in his first couple, 3 months than many presidents do in many, many years. And he's fulfilling his promise. It sounds like I'm being a political spokesman for him. I'm just trying to be practical. I mean, he went out and said he was going to do certain things. He did it. He had the Electoral College and the vote in the country behind him. So he's implementing what he promised. And I think that's really the key here. So you have to be grateful that he's, a man his age to be as sturdy. I mean, compared to Biden, who was like a numbskull. I mean, a guy couldn't even stand up and talk, had no independent thought, wasn't even running his own presidency. Others behind him were running it. He was just standing there like a dumbass, standing in front of cameras, and frankly, hardly did any talking. Look at Donald Trump. He answers every question. He's in front of the cameras constantly. He's open about what he thinks, whether you agree with it or not. I mean, how can you compare a Biden or any other president to someone who's been as vocal and open as he has been? So, I'm just tickled pink that he's in there and he has the strength and the width about him to do what he does. So I'm very happy about it. I hope that he, his health stays with him, and he continues to be hopefully successful moving forward. So if he implements all the changes he wants, it will be for the best of all countries. What about settling potential disputes. I mean, did Biden do anything the last 4 years to settle the Ukrainian war or make an attempt to do it other than sending weapons over there? At least, you know, he's talking to Zelensky. He's talking to Putin. He's trying to calm things down, do something about it. You know, what about the Mideast? Suddenly hostages are being released. Things are happening a little bit more dramatically in Israel than they were before he got into office. So even on a geopolitical basis, you know, he's done some remarkable things, and hopefully he's successful. It doesn't mean he will be successful with the Ukrainian war or with the Mideast, but he's certainly making an effort to do it. And he had some tremendous success, as you know, in his previous administration, setting up the Abraham Accords in the Mideast among Arab nations, which nobody had done before. And he had proclaimed Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which several U.S. presidents had talked about but never did. So it was just a remarkable performance. And you say, how do you think he's done? I couldn't be happier. I hope his success continues.
What's the latest on geocosmics and the markets?
Okay, well, we have a couple of things here. On the geocosmic front, I had an interesting story today. I just sort of read this the first time. There's a little M-class solar flare supposedly floating around right now. It may create some radio interference and stuff. They don't think it's very strong. So some Earth-orbiting satellites have detected this, and some interference is going on with some solar flare activity. But there's a big story today in the geocosmic area, which is really new to many people. They say there's new evidence that cosmic rays spark lightning. And as I'm going to read from an article here, it says every second, almost 50 bolts of lightning zigzag across the skies of the Earth. This is every second. Despite centuries of study, however, researchers aren't sure how these bolts get started. Electric fields and thunderbolts are often too weak to ignite a powerful discharge. So a new study published by the Journal of Geophysical Research says we believe that most lightning flashes and thunderstorms are ignited by cosmic ray showers. So cosmic rays bombarding the Earth could be something that we just discovered could be a trigger for a lot of lightning that we see on the planet. So I think that's really fascinating stuff. As far as other stuff going on, we just keep watching the lunar cycles. As I mentioned before, we were in this time frame on the vernal equinox, which is, you know, happening right now. Markets tend to change direction, and I've been looking for a bottom in this time frame since we saw a top coming out of December, out of the winter solstice. So we'll see. You know, those forces are in play. So between cosmic rays affecting lightning, lunar cycles coincident with lows and highs in the market, the seasonal patterns doing the same, we got plenty in the geocosmic sphere to pay attention to.
What's the latest on volcanic activity in sunspots?
Well, sunspots, nothing new reporting there. You know, the sunspots rotate around the sun, and I've learned this over the years, you know, myself, so, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but, you know, as they rotate and face the Earth, that seems to be the pattern that creates these solar flare risks, like the Carrington event and so forth in the mid-19th century. So nothing new there, volcanic activity has been high. You know, the Smithsonian reports this all the time. According to their February report out of the Smithsonian, there's between 40 and 50 continuing eruptions occurring on the Earth every day. So the question is, which one, if any, of these things will become more severe? Would any of these potentially become, you know, a global disaster? You know, explosion, a super volcano event or not, but just, you know, the emissions from these volcanoes is dangerous to our planet, blocking sunlight and potentially causing a nuclear winter on the planet if they really get out of control. So Mother Nature really is in control of our future, despite our feelings that we seem to control our destinies. But there's definitely a lot of volcanic activity and continues to be active. So we're in a high volcanic active period. And hopefully between that and sunspots, we don't see any near-term disasters.
Does this make any sense? Democrats have been the main buyers of Teslas. The Democrats are upset with Elon Musk and the job Doge is doing. So they vandalized Teslas owned by other Democrats.
The only way to answer that question, Jim, is if it's a question of mental illness. You know, much of it might be clinical in nature. Yeah, how can that possibly happen? So just it tells you how illogical and stupid the Democrats really are. In fact, I got a Facebook note from a cousin today that is supporting the Democrats. I actually deleted it from my Facebook. I don't want to hear this nonsense. Obviously, these people aren't thinking very clearly. They were jumping up and down about Teslas because of their concern about climate change and everything else. And now suddenly, because the man Elon Musk is trying to clean up the government and dispose of a lot of waste, and unfortunately, there's probably been a lot of kickback to the Democrats. So they don't like very much the budgets being cleaned up or the government agencies being disbanded that are spending wasteful money. So suddenly they dislike something which prior they love. So it's it's mental illness. That's what it is. I mean, liberalism is a mental disorder. That's the title of Michael Savage's great book from about 10 years ago, and I've been subscribed ever since to that theory. It's unfortunate, you're ignoring facts, you're looking to your own emotions, and being persuaded by a lot of people who are not thinking clearly. Obviously, blowing up Teslas is not the answer to solving the economic problems or political problems of the country, and certainly it's not going to help clean up the atmosphere, which is what supposedly environmentalists are looking for. So it makes no damn sense.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the interview, no currency lasts forever. The pound sterling has been around for a while, though. It was introduced by the Anglo-Saxons around the year 775 as coins minted from sterling silver. 240 of those coins equaled 1 pound of sterling silver. That's why it's called the pound.
Great history, Jim. Thanks for that information. Yeah, I mean, it's been around, but it's deteriorated in price, much as the U.S. dollar has since the Federal Reserve came in. So hopefully the dollar is around forever, but there's been so many other currencies that have come and gone. And I'm not saying the pound will go to zero or disappear, but in terms of the scale of history, it could happen, just because it could happen to us, but hopefully it doesn't. But in the meantime, paper money versus real money, is unfortunately, fortunately, gold and silver and hard assets, which have been around thousands of years, are really the ultimate resource in terms of creating value for a currency. Look what happened to the, U.S. dollar and gold since we went off the gold standard. You have to back currencies by real things, not just government promises and the printing press. So, It's happened to a lot of countries. Some extreme examples, as you know, over the years, including Germany, the beginning of the 20th century, and so forth. So hopefully we can back currency by real things, and then, we'll have some real value out there. But that's an interesting story about the pound sterling. Thank you for mentioning it.
Mark, can you tell us again about your special offer for our listeners?
Sure. Any subscriber can sign up at VRTrader.com using the promo code HALFOFF for 50% off for any of our newsletters. I would encourage you to take a look at the annual forecast reports, which cover all the major markets. I particularly would encourage you to look at the blockchain letter, which covers the crypto market, which I feel is going to be the biggest upcoming market here in terms of potential gains in the next year or two. Potential percentage gains, even bigger than the stock market. So you may want to take a look at that. And the promo code is half off. That's VRTrader.com.
Mark, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money. My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Todd Callender, Joseph Schachter, and Mark Leibovit. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.